Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard in the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. In our next segment, we talk with Jamie Stang with the University of Minnesota Department of Public Health.
So I'm Jamie Stang, and I'm an associate professor at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health.
And today you're here at the dietitian conference here in Fargo, North Dakota, at the DoubleTree. What is it you're speaking about today?
I am speaking about obesity in women and how it affects their health and the health of their offspring. So the need, basically the need to intervene in obesity in women prior to pregnancy and then after pregnancy.
What you're talking about seems to me preventative health, you know, because you're talking about the next generation and everything. So talk to me a little bit about that prevention side of it.
Yeah, so I think there's two pieces there. One is, so most of my work is actually with women who are already overweight or obese. What we're trying to do is prevent future health issues or at least minimize the health issues in these women. But we know that obese women have infants that are at much higher risk for obesity themselves, as well as depression, chronic disease in those infants. Irrespective of how they feed those infants, they're born genetically predisposed to obesity. So the idea is that by intervening in the mother, we can maybe have some effect on her health, but we can definitely have generational effects. And the more that we learn about epigenetics, the more we realize it may be even your grandmother's health that affects your health just as much as your mother's.
I read a few years ago that a lot more people were obese than were genetically obese because of our diet and everything like that. First off, just talk to me about true or false on that. And secondly, if somebody's not genetically obese but eats a lot, can their offspring then become genetically predisposed?
Yeah, so the whole idea behind obesity, I think the big point that says it's not just genetics is the fact that obesity rates have more than doubled and in some cases almost quadrupled in age groups, and yet genetically we can't change that. We can't mutate that much in one generation. So it really points to, it may be that people had genes that predisposed them to obesity, but the environment is making those genes much more expressed or much more active. And so it could be, and we know that from twin studies, if you take identical twins and they're raised apart, they will have very similar physiques, but their weight can vary a lot based on the environment that they're in. So they say roughly about 50 to 60% of obesity is probably genetically determined, and about the other 40 to 50% is probably environmentally determined. And that's just from what we know from these identical twin studies, which there aren't a lot of, but it's, I think, the closest thing we have to an experiment.
5-6 years ago, probably 7 now, I interviewed Dr. David Kessler, former FDA administrator. After he left, he wrote a book essentially about salt, sugar, fat, and the combination, how the human mind and the human body is not equipped to resist that combination of salt, sugar, fat. Now I throw in the Starbucks caffeine in there, and I wonder if the body can resist it as well. But is that still pretty much the big driver when it comes to obesity, is the salt, sugar, and fats and the combinations?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I think that definitely, you know, food is very palatable right now. And if it's palatable, it's a lot harder to stop eating. It's also more available. So we don't have to work. We don't have to chase our food. We don't have to grow our food in most cases. So it requires very little energy to get your food, and there's a lot of energy in it. I think that palatability is a big issue. But I also think, so there's some research that's looked specifically at carbohydrates and sugar. And they show that they can activate certain parts of the brain that are very similar to opioid receptors. And so this idea that food is addictive, I wouldn't say it's as addictive as some other components, but there's definitely a science underlying this idea that it may be that we really can't easily stop ourselves. Willpower may not be enough to overcome some of what we have in our food supply right now.
That's interesting you brought up the carbs and the sugar combo about the opiate effect. I interviewed Dr. Neil Bernard. He's a physician of responsible medicine. He just did a study on cheese, and he had the same, he said the same thing, that it almost releases like a opiate type experience in your mind, and that's off cheese, which is not carbs and sugars. Yes. That's fat and, you know, dairy, I guess. But have you heard of this at all with the cheese?
I haven't. I tend not to focus on individual foods, but more on patterns, just being that I'm in population health. But I think it, you know, if you think about it from an evolutionary standpoint, food was not that common. It was not, and the types of food we had were foods that were tended to be lower in energy. And so when they did have access to foods that were high in energy, whether that be sugar or fat, the brain would evolve so that you would automatically want to eat a lot of those when you had contact. Evolutionary biology is maybe not as quick and effective as it needs to be, and so we haven't evolved to adapt to the kind of environment that we have right now. And so it wouldn't surprise me if there aren't a lot of responses in the brain to foods that are high in energy, high in sugar, high in fat, because that's what would have helped us as a species, thousands and thousands of years ago.
So this will be the most political question I'm going to get, and you don't have to answer it. I did ask Dr. David Kessler this a number of years ago. FDA, Food and Drug Administration. Sugar. Is sugar a drug or is it food? And Dr. David Kessler said, well, when I was the Food and Drug Administrator, I said, food. He goes, now? I'm not sure I would say that. He didn't answer it, but he alluded to he felt that sugar had more drug qualities than food qualities. You don't not have to answer that because I understand there's a lot of money involved with the sugar industry, but do you have any opinion on that?
Well, you know, sugar is essentially carbohydrates that are broken down. So we can't really do without sugar. I mean, we're going to have sugar. So from that perspective, yes, it is food. It's in the food supply. On the other hand, I think it's how it's used. We use it more as a drug. When you're adding, you know, sugar that's naturally occurring in foods is one thing. When you start adding sugar to food to make it palatable, to make people mm-hmm. want to eat more, I think that sort of crosses the line from becoming a food component into, once it's an additive and it's there to get people to eat more, it sort of starts to cross that line. So I think it really has to do with how it's used as opposed to, you know, just the component itself.
That's a good point, too. I mean, and we go back to the Food and Drug Administration. It's so funny how they lump under the same thing. But you're right. When it becomes an additive, it's more of it's a refined, you know, refined food that you add. And I think Dr. David Kessler even said, he goes, it's very similar to cocaine from that, how they refine it down. And, of course, we'd never consider cocaine food, you know. So talk to me about what it is that you guys are doing at the U of M now. I imagine you're probably doing some research or you're doing something there that's going to be cutting edge. So we got a lot of people listening that are farmers and a lot of people that are trying to get into different industries. And you guys are kind of setting the next stage for the generation of business. That's how I look at it. You know, yeah, research is good for us, but there are also people that will figure out how to make a profit on what research is being done. So what are you guys doing there?
Well, a lot of our work is population-based. So it's a little, we're all over the place. A lot of obesity prevention, that's one of our big pushes in the Division of Epidemiology and Community Health. But we're also doing a lot of work around food access and this idea of the food deserts. How do you make sure that everybody has access to healthy food and that it's the least refined, sort of most healthy options you can. We've been doing a lot of work with corner stores and convenience stores in some of the urban neighborhoods where they really don't have a grocery store for many miles. There's not good access to a grocery store. People who live in urban areas often don't own vehicles, and it's hard to transport all your groceries on a bus.
To listen to the full-length interview with Jamie Stang with the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, or to listen to other Coffee and Capitalism features, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard in the Crude Life Media Network.
Sharpening the sickles like silver knives. The lines keep coming where the lanes divide it. You and the road in the middle of the night. It's
music on today's program is written and performed by singer-songwriter Brooks West. To find out more about Brooks West and his music, visit thecrudelife.com, click on the Musicians tab. Once again, that's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
The strength you got left is going to be enough.
If you have any coffee and capitalism questions for myself or any of our experts, feel free to email me at jason@thecrudelife.com. That's jason@thecrudelife.com. And feel free to like our Facebook page as well. That's facebook.com/thecrudelife. facebook.com/thecrudelife. Like us on Facebook today. This is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. Let me take a moment to talk to you about Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching. Now, with Hatch Coaching, you'll experience extreme transparency. Eric Hatch has built an empire on the business of helping others, and in this case, that means helping companies create wealth and abundance. By choosing Hatch Coaching, you're going to gain the knowledge and tools that will take your business to that next level. Eric Hatch speaks on workplace culture, honesty in the workplace, transparency, faith, compassionate capitalism, and many other topics that will grow your business. Make sure you call and reserve Eric Hatch today, 701-318-4946. That's 701-318-4946. Or I'll tell you what, send me an email, jason@thecrudelife.com. That's jason@thecrudelife.com. And I'll make sure that it gets to Eric Hatch. It's time for your company to create wealth and abundance too. Reserve Eric Hatch today.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. Learn more at mbienergyservices.com.